Welcome to the Boost VC podcast. At Boost VC, we are the accelerator that invests the first $500,000 into sci-fi tech startups. And this show is all about talking to investors and founders to dig into the latest topics around sci-fi tech and building great companies. I'm your host, Adam Draper, founder and managing director of Boost VC. Are you ready to rock? On today's episode, wow, that on sounded so like deep. On today's episode of the Boost VC podcast, I get a chance to talk about the future of financing with two of my favorite founders, Joris Delanue and Thibaut Favreux. I'm butchering their last names purposely because that's sort of part of the joke with them is that I have a horrible French accent. On this podcast, we talk about one of the most popular topics in Silicon Valley right now, which is, can Silicon Valley become digital? They are French founders who purposely went from France to Silicon Valley in order to raise capital. And I found this conversation specifically so fascinating because it was a real need for them to go find people who are ambitious with their money. So we talk about the continued value of Silicon Valley investors and voting with your feet. And then one of my favorite topics is about rational people building irrational things. This conversation is incredible. I think that Thibaut and Joris are second, third time founders. They solve very, very hard problems, and they are attempting to make a switch from to make a continuous financing instrument. They've built a continuous financing instrument that allows startups to continuously finance rather than have it be a one-time transaction. It's incredibly exciting online. They are deep crypto, so we also talk about some deep crypto stuff, but this is going to be a really, really fun conversation for you to listen to.
Welcome to the Boost VC podcast. I am here with the founders of Fairmint, and I'm so excited to talk about the future of fundraising with the intersection of sort of a cryptocurrency, especially on a day like today where Bitcoin passed 20,000, which is pretty cool. Today, I get to interview Boost VC founders, Joris Delanue.
Very good.
Right?
Totally right.
Correct. Okay, perfect. And Thibaut Favreux.
Yeah, Thibaut Favre. That's perfect. Like Brett Favre.
Perfect. I was kidding before getting on the microphone that I never ever get their names correct. I tried my hardest at a French accent.
That's good.
Yeah, welcome. Okay, I want to hear, so give us sort of a one-liner on what Fairmint is, and then I'll start pestering you with amazing questions.
Well, so Fairmint is very simple. Like, we just help founders like turn their equity like into the most powerful instrument they have, community alignment.
And so what does that mean? So here, you're saying you're allowing founders to fundraise and align the community.
Exactly. So we help founders like get their equity into the hands of like stakeholders. And so there's like really two ways to do that is like stakeholders can either invest or earn equity from the company. And so we basically provide a platform that allows founders like to do that in a very, very simple and automated way.
Yeah, so is it a new way to fundraise, or have people done this thing before?
It's completely new, just because like what we bring to fundraising is like the continuous aspect. So that means that like before, when you wanted to fundraise, you needed to bring in the lawyers, the legal. You need to say to people, "Hey, I'm going to fundraise, and like please, like do you want to invest and all?" And so it's like it diverts you from business totally. Like here, what you are able to do with Fairmint is you're going to set up what we call a continuous offering. And once you set that up, then you can just forget about it and you can put an invest now button on your website, and anyone at any single time can come and just invest in your company without you being in the loop. And that's just life changing. Like with Joris, we joke every day, like, because when we wake up, the first thing we do is we look at our dashboard and we look who invested last night. And it's just like, it's crazy.
So you as Fairmint also have put up a continuous financing. So people can go and they can go invest. And what's the feeling? So you guys have fundraised the traditional way and your way, which maybe I shouldn't call it your way, but it's cool to say that you have your own way of fundraising. So I'm going to say your way.
Okay.
So what do you feel the differences are, like psychologically as a founder?
So I'll answer and I let Joris answer. So personally, what I just love is that like right now we've just crossed like $500,000 raised without communicating at all. Like we did not, we never went out and say, hey guys, come invest. We just focused on building cool stuff, great product, and people who come to our website, they're like, wow, that's great. And then they want to invest and they can just invest and they don't even have to call us and say, hey guys, like, what's the term? No, they just go, they invest. And so like, this is the best way of fundraising. It's fundraising while building. Like not, you don't have to make a marketing dance to investors to say, hey, look how great we are. And oh, like if you're an investor, you can come and invest right now.
I mean, in a way, it's almost the perfect thing for founders and so and for investors, right? Like, because it's almost like in investments, I sort of say this thing every once in a while, which is like investments, there's no proprietary like deal flow anymore. So, right. And so it becomes about access. And so you get to be one of those funnels of access points that are going to be in existence, which is, you know, you're going to curate, you're going to find, you're going to bring together a bunch of investors. And that's pretty fascinating. So as an investor, like I'll go in, I'll see a couple and I'll be like, oh, I like what these people are doing. And I just invest.
Yeah. And you can just monitor, like you can wait and see how the funding team is executing. And after a while, because the access is always open, you can find.
Why didn't this exist before? Why didn't it exist? Why couldn't I do this before?
Well, we had to invent a new financial instrument. Like most fundraising today happens with the SAFE, right? Simple Agreement for Future Equity. And so we needed to create an instrument that is like more continuous. So we invented like the CAFE. So it's like the SAFE, but you replace the S with the C. It's like a continuous agreement for future equity.
Well, and you have to have an apostrophe on the E, right? For CAFE.
Yeah, in the accent. Like, you know, we're French. So it's not the CAFE. It's like the CAFE.
It'd be great if like you released like a side letter that was like the croissant and like like you yeah, like that like you want those special terms, well that's the croissant terms. and you like that those are donut related.
We don't do pain au chocolat. No, not yet.
How long have you been working on Fairmint? And then I would love for just the people listening to understand like your backgrounds, because you both come from, well, like good backgrounds. You built things before, you've successfully sold things before, but I would love to understand like learnings from that and why you felt that Fairmint was the direction of your career for the next, you know, starting a company is always difficult. Like why this one?
Yeah, okay. I can start here. So I've been an entrepreneur since 15 years now, and having companies with hundreds of employees before, scaling super fast. What was key in 2008 already for me was how could I have more and more people around the table of the company that I was building, and those people were employees. And in Europe, stock options are pretty new. So it was very, very difficult to do anything in 2008, creating holdings, SPVs for employees, trying to explain the key in owning securities. And actually, that has been like literally a field Ariane for me over the last 15 years, because I've always tried to find a way to do that. And after I built my second company, exceeded in 2016, I joined the Singularity University in Mountain View to work on what they call the Moonshot Project. So anything that would impact more than 1 billion people over the world. And what was pretty obvious for me at the end was really like, how can I change the way financing is possible for companies after 10 years using bank and debt and factoring and revenue to finance my growth? And actually, I started to build an exchange for startups using SPVs. And during a weekend in San Francisco, at a good friend of Thibaut and I, Solomon from Docker, immediately connected what I was doing with what Thibaut was working on since a while. And so, and that's how we started the story of Fermins. I will let Thibaut present maybe his background and get back then to...
It's not that all French entrepreneurs just want to work with other French entrepreneurs. It's just like happenstance.
But it helps, you know, it helps to share some opinions sometimes.
So on my end, so I'm a software engineer by trade. My first startup was called like All My Apps. It was like the first app store for Windows back in 2008. Back then, I was in France, raised funds like in France to develop it. And so fast forward, so I sold the company in 2014. And right after this, I started a nonprofit from the U.S. because at that time I was living in the U.S. already. But in France, like to crowdsource the best candidate for the French presidential election. And so all of this, like basically I've been raising funds all my life, like for my companies, for my nonprofit and all. And you can see like how broken it is. And basically one thing I think we're like that really drive Joris and I, because like before joining forces together, like we did this 1 week of full like a retreat in Connecticut just to just align ourselves, our vision and all. And one thing that we really agree on is that one of the biggest problems right now in the world is like income inequality. And that's because most of the users cannot access like wealth building financial products that are like private companies, high growth private companies. And so at Fermin, we're really on a mission to like decentralize access to democratize access to wealth by helping like these private, high-growth private
companies. While you're talking, my brain's going everywhere. I'm just like, I'm like, could this be used for charity? Like, could your continuous financing be used for charity? Is that a thing? Is that sort of what charities do anyway? I don't know how.
No, it couldn't be used for charity. It's really like made for like these high-growth, like private companies. Like the dream that we have is, you go fast forward, like Airbnb just IPO'd, right? But a company like Airbnb should be able to IPO on its own website.
The thing that was popping up in my head. So, your vision is everyone's their own exchange.
Yep.
Oh, that's awesome. But what I was also thinking was, you know, on our portfolio, on our webpage, we have all these logos and you can't do anything with the logos. I've always like, it's always a frustrating thing because you're like, oh, you're sort of figuring out what types of companies, like startups like to look and investors like to look just to judge, but like it doesn't really do anything. It'd be really interesting if any of our companies are fundraising with the cafe, like we're just like, hey, currently fundraising, and like people click in. And so then there's a purpose for us to have this web page that has all these portfolios. So we're actually pushing. Should we do that?
You should check with your lawyers that you are not engaging in any broker dealer activity by doing this.
I'm not going to get paid.
Just saying, just having like the link without saying go invest and everything should be fine.
I'm not getting paid. I've realized that most things like that, nothing triggers unless there's money that changes hands. And I'm not getting paid on that. Like, I'm just sort of like, I'm like, hey, like, it would be like me introducing someone to something, you know, like, hey, you know, like this.
Oh, that could work. Again, like we're not lawyers, so it might be a little bit gray. But
don't talk like that. Don't shove lawyers in my bed. Don't do this. But, okay, that's exciting. Everyone's their own exchange, and then you would have to. Oh man, there's so many things that could happen. Okay, we've talked about all this stuff without saying any crypto related words. Okay, that's cool. That's pretty exciting. But you do use some form of cryptocurrency.
Yeah, we definitely do. So sometimes we refer to ourselves like as a cryptech company. It's like because we're a fintech from a user perspective. Like nobody knows there's crypto behind, but there's only crypto behind. So this is where like we have our foot in crypto and our head in like the Web 2 world. And
you're translating us to the how people should be using crypto's crypto when, like, it works when no one knows it's there, right? Like, yep. And that's, I always think it's
we just use it when it makes sense to use it. Like, we don't push crypto onto people. We don't ask them, you have to know crypto in order to use Fermin. Like
there is no need actually, because blockchain has its own benefits. you know, and if you only focus on what are the benefits of using the blockchain in your stack, then you can only wonder, like, am I okay to use these benefits? Yes, no. And most of the time, it's super obvious. So the blockchain start not to be an issue at all. And sometimes we even like close customer, and that's when we start to work with them, that they realize that there is blockchain in the stack, which is key, because that means that we completely abstracted the crypto, the blockchain, to only focus on the user experience.
Yeah.
And do you guys own some Bitcoin?
We do.
Of course. Like, we're super happy today.
it is funny how like the price of something can really dictate your happiness level on like day to day. But the in Bitcoin, but I'm numb to it at this point. It's just gone up and down so many times. How did you first find out about? I feel like we should pay a little tribute to Bitcoin today. Like a little, like, I feel like the community grew a little bit today. Institutions are buying. It's exciting. Like, we should pay a little tribute. So, like, what was your first experience, if you remember it, with Bitcoin? And why do you own Bitcoin? I think those are two.
Joyce, you want to stop?
No, go ahead.
Okay,
you will tell all the story of your.
You guys talk so well. You know what I love is like you know what each other are thinking right now because you guys have been working like so in tuned, and, which is by the way, remotely that's difficult. Like to actually, you guys just did that like founder telepathy thing. Yeah. And it was like
we have a trick with Joyce is that we live in the same Zoom room, so we're fine. Like
we're not remote. You're like, we're not remote.
It's same room.
Technically, we are.
Yeah, so no, Bitcoin's been a bitch with me. So I first, like, because before I was like the CEO of this app store, and so I installed a Bitcoin client actually in 2011. And I remember perfectly because I installed it and I stared at it for 10 minutes and it was syncing. And it was doing nothing, and I could create addresses. It was making no sense to me. So after 10 minutes, just uninstalled the whole thing. I was like, this is never going to work. And then back in 2013, like, I came back to it, and I bought my first Bitcoins. The only problem I had is that I left all of them on Mt. Gox. And so in 2014, I lost all of them. So this way, I used to say, like, I'm holding through Mt. Gox. Like, they are my custodian. So like,
well, it's either a really, really safe custodian or a really, really horrible custodian.
So then after that, I was like really pissed with Bitcoin. And so I did not touch it again, like in 2015. And I retaliated by coming back through Ethereum, like for this like open primary that we were organizing in France. Like, we built a voting module on top of Ethereum. And so I came back through Ethereum. And then, like, when Ethereum came up, then I sold a bunch to buy back some Bitcoins. And now Bitcoins is like my biggest holding.
And on my end, I started purchasing Bitcoin like maybe 2 years and a half ago or something like that. I remember it was when the Bitcoin was pretty low. And
it was a good time.
And actually, I had this discussion with the friend of someone that was working with us at Fairmint at the beginning. And basically was explaining the cost of mining a Bitcoin, and it was very close to the cost. And so he was saying, like, it couldn't go lower. And so that's when basically I understood that it was the right time for me to start. And I did well. I just have one regret. My kids wanted Bitcoins.
They want a Bitcoin?
Yeah, my 6 years old was like, Dad, I want a Bitcoin for Christmas, because she keeps hearing a lot about it. And like always, I wait the last minute to buy the Christmas gift. I should have done it like 6 months ago, you know?
Oh, completely. If you ask my daughter what I do, one of my daughters what I do, she would say Bitcoin and own the ocean. Like, those are her two things that she says. And I'm like, you do know what I do. You know what I'm targeting. And so it is good to just like, fundamentally, eventually, by planting like Bitcoin, eventually she's going to ask the questions, what's Bitcoin, like all that stuff. She doesn't really care right now. She's not really in that zone right now. Okay, one really interesting thing is, like, you know, Bitcoin is very global, which is fascinating. And so I feel Bitcoin was one of the first tech revolutions that sort of it started somewhere, but it hit everywhere sort of at an interest, like a similar time, it felt like. It was sort of like there's this white paper on the web. Enough people had access to the internet. A lot of people started thinking about how currency worked. And then like there's been like a growing... You guys are French entrepreneurs. You're from France. You're both from France, right?
Yes, we are, definitely.
Okay, you spend enough time in France to have an accent. Is I guess my point. What has been your experience as being a French entrepreneur? And nothing to do with Bitcoin. I'm just thinking like internationally. What is your experience, and why did you end up in Silicon Valley? I sort of want to talk about like. You are French, and you could have built this company in France, and you probably still will build some part of it in France. But like, why did you end up in Silicon Valley while you're building out your company?
So, Joris, you want to, because we have different stories on this too. Like, Joris, you want to give your
yeah. thoughts? So on my end, I've always been building companies in Europe, in France mostly, before. And after I sold my second company, I understood like literally the mindset. In Europe and especially in France, is always like super local. When you start to work, you start to build something for French people. And that's one of the reasons why I chose a Singularity University after I sold Nexteam, because I wanted to go and confront myself to this new type of mindset first. And I was truly...
So Silicon Valley as a mindset is sort of a cool concept. Okay.
Yeah, and actually the thing is that when you work from there and when you start to build from there, it seems that your market is worldwide, like immediately. No matter what you are doing, you don't even care of border. And this is one of the only place that I visited where you can really feel that. And when we started Fairmint, I remember that we were going on discussion on that, debating with Thibault on whether we would incorporate in France or in the US. I remember that it was absolutely key to immediately be seen, not as French founders, but be seen as founder of a Silicon Valley company. And the last 2 years that we spent working from IDEO Studio and from Booz VC in San Francisco and in San Mateo, I think that's the best that we could have done for the company. And I remember like 2 or 3 weeks ago, you published about incorporating in Delaware. I think it's the same mindset. Like, don't wonder, don't try to innovate on this part. Simply do it, because that's the best gift that you can do for your company.
Yeah, like I 100% agree. Like, imagine we invent a cafe and we're a French company. Nobody would care. Nobody would care. We love France. Like, we love our country. Like, French love like France. That's just a given. But the thing is, you cannot launch a new financial product from France. Like, this is just not the industry. You want to be where like people will listen. If you launch a new financial product from the Silicon Valley, people are like, wow, this is the most restrictive like securities law jurisdiction. This is where like innovation is happening. So then you're credible. You do that from France, nobody listens. And that was the problem with my first startup. All my apps was an app store for PC. And one of the VC I met one time told me, why the heck did you start in France? You have zero ecosystem in France on that. Like, your partners are not here. Your customers are not here. And this is why I ended up moving to the US, because yeah, most of my customers were US based. And so you need to start where your market, where the biggest market is. You want to do luxury, start in France. You want to do like, there's a lot of things you can start in France, but like launching a financial product, like it had to be in the US.
Get ready for that midpoint ad roll. This show is brought to you by Boost VC. Imagine that. Boost VC is the accelerator for sci-fi tech. We invest the first $500,000 into amazing humans using sci-fi tech to build the future trillion-dollar markets. If you believe you are one of those amazing humans, apply now at www.boost.vc/apply. We would love to talk to you.
There's like a really interesting conversation going on in obviously the startup community on Twitter that's about a lot of people leaving California, right? And it's sort of focused around Silicon Valley because, yeah, I do think it's a big deal that we lost Elon Musk. But from an outsider's perspective, people who have, from a like geographically outsider perspective, people who have come from a different country, a different state, and come to California, like, I mean, what are your thoughts? You're like, you guys are praising Silicon Valley, saying like, hey, this is the place where people are listening and accepting an idea that's different. What, like, do you see the concept of Silicon Valley being moved or shifted? Or do you feel that it's actually just like, hey, if I was to start another company, if any of my friends are going to start a company, I'm just going to tell them to go to San Francisco right now. Where do you guys land?
I think what matters now, the Silicon Valley mindset is now getting more and more digital. So more and more people are available on Zoom. One of the good points with the post-COVID era would probably be that you will save time, you will meet people faster. And we see a huge digitalization of all this mindset. But still, at one point, it will always be important for founders to really go there, to spend some time there, to get some connection there, to make sure that part of the company will get this culture from there. It doesn't mean that the team has to be there, because with Thibault, we have a very opinionated way of building the company, because probably because it's not our first, and we try to literally learn of all our past experience. Right now, we have this vision of a centralized conception and a decentralized or distributed execution, where the team is literally all over the world. Everything is written. We use Slack as our basic wiki, with obviously GitHub and all those tools that we use to operate the company. But the thing is that we feel the mindset for everyone that are on 13 time zones, on 4 continents, without even having them in the Silicon Valley.
Yeah. But
what was key was for us to spend time there to make sure that both the company would be seen as a Silicon Valley company and that the product would be also reflect the Silicon Valley mindset. Yeah, go ahead, Thibault.
Yeah, when we say like the Silicon Valley mindset, I think it's more like the investor Silicon Valley mindset. Not that much the people. And now, like with like post-COVID, as Joy said, like this mindset, investors now, like in this post-COVID era, you can be an investor in the Silicon Valley. You make deals all over the world. I'll give you an example, like Fermin. Just when we started fundraising for Fermin, so it was early 2019, so we went to see like French VCs, just like to get used to pitching and you should have seen, we should have filmed this. Like it was laughable. Like it was just like we were getting nowhere. Like we would not ever have raised a dime in France, right? And then like we make like you were first check. And I remember like having this call with Brayton. On Friday, Brayton said, hey, we're in, we put 500K. Like, this is it. Like, because you were not trying, you're like, okay, yeah, these guys are like the serial founders, they know what they are doing, they have a great idea, it can be like so disruptive that if it works, it's gonna be crazy. And so, okay, let's go. And this is Silicon Valley investor mindset. And this is something that you unfortunately don't find anywhere else.
Well, you find it when you invest it, but you also get the same when it's a no. Because when we had a no from partners, because we were not discussing with analysts that were questioning our previous experience as entrepreneurs, but no, we were discussing with the best partners in Silicon Valley. And the feedback with the no was like immediate, literally 48 hours later, max. And the mail was like strong feedback with all the thing that justified the no. To tell you, we are 2 years later, there's still some analysts and principal in the French VC that we met, we still wait for the answer. Yeah.
We don't want to bitch on France. Like they are also investors in France. But like the truth is that an idea like Fermin cannot seed fund this idea in France. Like this is not possible.
I think that's a really interesting conversation. Like what companies do you think, I guess you'd want some cultural relevance if you were to do it in France. So they're thinking like, hey, what could work in France probably first rather than, and you were thinking what's going to just take over the world and it's going to be a new way to fundraise and we're going to own it. And like that disruption, you sort of need crazy people to be supportive of. So like, I get that.
In France, like people are looking at the French market. Could this work on its own in the French market? Are they going to be profitable soon enough? Because like there's not also like a great acquisition market in France. So getting liquidity is harder and things like that. So They have valid reasons. They are not bad people. They have valid reasons because they want to make their fund work. It makes their legitimacy more risk averse than American investors.
Well, I just think it's interesting that you were able to, you know, we are a very global community now, right? Like, you were able to vote with your feet and like go and try to fundraise somewhere else. And they voted. They said, okay, like, you know, we invested, you know, Idealab, the IDEO invested. And you were able to actually fundraise. And then the internet evidently has invested. So now through your continuous financing. So like, I think it's fascinating. You're a pretty good analogy. And I don't think before this call, I was really thinking about it. You're a pretty good analogy for like, okay, what ideas would be better to build a network somewhere else? You know, like, because I think there's some companies that probably shouldn't be built in Silicon Valley, but we are, we're more accepting of most things, right? Like we're more accepting of like, and I think it's because we have a culture of like over the last 50 years, the incumbents have like been killed off like three or four times. Like it's sort of like, we're like, well, we know it can happen. So,
well, this is the thing here, like in Silicon Valley, there's kind of this like self-fulfilling prophecy where like first investors are competing, like really, like this is something that's unique, right? So it's like you want to find a deal before anyone else. So you take more risk to find that deal. And second is like, you know, there's no limit. Like you're not bounded by any imaginary limit. If somebody like super weird comes at you with like a crazy idea that you had never thought about and a guy looks legit. And I think that's the best like investor thesis that you can ever have. And you were telling us, we're looking for rational people doing irrational things. And that's it. And you just summed up like, you're not trying to find why this irrational thing is irrational or should be rationalized. Like, I don't understand, but it's they look like people with a brain that they come to this conclusion. So, okay, I'm betting on them. And I love that quote from you.
Good. I actually really like that quote too. And I don't say it enough. So I'm going to start saying it more because it's also, yeah, it is. I think the sci-fi in me is always looking for the rational person doing the irrational thing. And I think I've been like, I think that's where, and then I do say, or irrational people doing rational things, because it's like, you either need someone with less experience and is like a little like wild to like disrupt an industry that has been sleeping, or you need for someone to build something brand new, it needs to be like very just like patient and like calm. And like, I'm going to say rational doing irrational from now on. That's going to be my, I'm just, because I think the other part of
it's great.
Yeah.
It's great. When you said that, it blew my mind. It's like, wow, that's just great.
So, okay. We've covered a lot of stuff and I think they're all relevant to the conversation that are going on today. Like, so why don't we move into the lightning round? To the lightning round. Okay. You are trapped on an island for the rest of your life. What game are you playing?
Chess.
Zelda.
Okay. Those are very different answers. And which Zelda?
Link to the Past.
Okay. So that's not N64. That's
Super Nintendo. Yeah, I'm an old guy.
You, like, original Link.
The Super NES. No,
yeah, the Super NES. Nintendo one.
So not even N64, which, you know, I remember my friends like being like, oh, it only took me 84 hours to beat. And I'm like, yeah, great.
No, I had discovered, like, because I had, like, I'm a sequential guy. I had the Super Nintendo and I had a computer. So as soon as I had a computer, I did not touch the console anymore. So yeah, I'm stuck at Super Nintendo.
And Joris, we should play chess sometime.
Yeah, anytime. You know what? I try to play chess since maybe 8 years, almost every day.
Have you? Have you succeeded in that quest?
Well, yeah, I keep playing. It's one of the stuff that I do when I need to relax.
So I have
it on my iPad and I play.
I have a chessboard and playing myself.
Now I play with my 6 years old.
Have you ever played a full game against yourself trying to beat yourself?
Well, yeah, that's what I was thinking when you were saying about the island.
Yeah,
because Zelda, you need power.
It's fascinating though, right? Like, because you actually, oh, it's okay if you have power. You can have power, and you also have an internet connection if you want it, but you can't communicate.
Okay. You're trapped. That.
But you can't you can't be trapped on the island. Like
then,
you can't.
Then if it would have been that, maybe I would have choose the room. Do you know the room?
No.
How do you say a castet? I don't know how you say that in English, actually.
Actually, I don't know either. It's like the Rubik's Cube, something like that breaks your head.
Completely block, and you have to find all the mechanism and to open a box. You see?
Oh, cool.
Yeah, it's on the iPad as well. I play that since 2014.
You still that. And you still play it?
Yeah.
Wow, like you are a lifetime user. That is great.
Well, I don't play every day on that, and it takes time.
Chess is fascinating if you're playing against yourself, though, because I never thought that I would be trying to outfoxing yourself, and you sort of develop a personality on each side. It's like weird.
Sometimes I cheat, I have to say. I have to say.
Oh, every once in a while, you're like, oh, dude, like if you really commit to it, like with conviction, like it sort of messes with your head a little bit. Okay, what is your favorite song to jam to when no one is watching?
I think it was the soundtrack that we use for the Boost Video Tribe that we did. You know, when we won, it's a song from a French group NTM. I won't say what it means.
It was good music. I remember that was part of the poll.
Yeah, that's just
And I'm a Daft Punk guy.
Oh, any particular? Do you call Daft Punk songs? Are they songs or are they?
The Alive. This is one of the biggest regrets I have in my life is not having attended like the Alive 2007 concert. And I keep like this is like.
Well, you'll have to attend the 2021 one. Okay. Do you guys play any musical instruments?
I don't.
What is that instrument?
Right there.
What? Oh, drums. We talked about this the other day. I forgot. Yeah. No. I pretend to play the guitar. You can ask one person one question. What person? What question?
I don't know, Shamat. Shamat, will you invest in Ferment?
If you invent something that's like you call it a SPAC cafe, I think
he's reinventing IPO, and we're doing two. And so I think we're fighting the same battle. And so if I can get a reach,
sure is that,
Shamat, I think
that. Yeah, the goal for us is to have a SPAC that will literally go and IPO the cafe offerings of good companies. So that's a cool vision. And on my end, I think I would ask Elon Musk if he would be ready to do a cafe for the Boring Company.
Ooh, a continuous financing for Elon Musk projects would do very well.
With lots of fan, I think it
makes sense. On the SPAC Fay. Okay, this is another similar question, but it's you can have dinner with two people. From all span of time, history and time, who would those two people be that would be like a really good conversation?
Huh.
For sure, I would have Steve Jobs on the table. You know,
I've done this 100 times and no one actually said Steve Jobs. And I think it would be a really good one.
And I'm looking for who would be the right one for the last seat.
He would be good.
Maybe I would have jumped in the history, like having Jobs and JFK on the table.
And so would it be Steve Jobs post iPhone or pre iPhone?
I would say, well, actually, the iPhone he had it, you know, like way long before than he announced it. So, what's for sure is that with the iPhone in mind, would it be post release of the iPhone? I don't know. I still remember the day he announced it. I was live watching and that was just amazing. And on JFK, what I remember is always like the conquest in space, you know?
We're going to space because we can. I love the speech where he said, because we can. Yeah. Like, that's such a ballsy move from a, like, that's such a good move from a president, a leader. Like, that's just hard. That's such a good move. Just saying, like, this is where we're going. Like, you don't hear, my fear about political leaders these days is no one's pushing, like, us to be a part of this future, other than people like the innovators, right? Like, the innovators are building and pulling us forward. How about you, Tebow?
Yeah, so I'm more into, like, the politics, like, history side. Like, honestly, like, I guess a French, I would say, this is very cliche, but if I could have a dinner with, like, Charles de Gaulle, I would definitely take one. Like, this is, like, this type of people that, like, make crazy decisions at a time where this is, like, when you decide just by your guts that, hey, like, we haven't lost the war, and I'm going to be the one leading and make sure that France is actually winning the war. That is insane. If you read the life of Charles de Gaulle, is more than bigger than life. It's incredible. And I guess I have kind of the same, like, because I'm fascinated by the early days of the U.S. and how it must have felt like to build a new country from scratch. So I take Alexander Hamilton.
Well, you're sort of doing it. You're building a new nation, an internet nation of fundraising. So it's
This is what, like, this type of people who just, like, don't give a shit about, like, what's the current status quo and just try to project themselves in, like, what could be and just make it happen. This is so inspiring, people. I would not take a dinner with Steve Jobs. I don't like Steve. I leave it to droids.
Well, you built an app store for the Microsoft engine that really succeeded. Yeah. Okay, last question. What's your definition of success?
Impact. For me, like, it's all, like, I just want to, everything, so it's very personal, but everything I do since I've sold my first company is just, I'm trying to think, like, okay, I have these qualities, these skills. How do I leverage them to have the most positive impact on people's world and on people's lives? And this is why, like, I started with the nonprofit, like, in politics in France. And then, like, a experiment came to the realization that say, okay, if you want to change society, you need to change the economy. And if you need to change the economy, you need to change how it's financed. And I think, like, this experiment, we're really tackling the root cause of, like, the problems that society has today. And so if we can change how the economy is being financed, we're going to have, like, a massive impact. And like, this is personally what drives me.
Yeah. On my end, I like Thibaut said it, Fermint, we didn't wake up one day thinking, like, oh, let's do that. It's really our experience, our goal. And when we did this retreat before to start teaming up to make sure that we were the right team for such a project, we also wanted to align our vision for the next 10 years. And I remember that we wrote the figure until when we wanted to go, like, pushing the company without with resilience. And we had this fit with a huge threshold, which means that impact was key. So I agree on that. I have to say also that success is very relative. I mean, due to COVID, I spent, like, lots of time far from my family. And honestly, I think today what matters to me is more like seeing my kids saying that they are proud of what I'm doing. And this is my own success now. I can say that easily now after, you know, building several companies or selling them. But still, that is the best value that I get today from my own success. Yeah, and I do it not for the stress, but really for me. I don't care of being staged and everything. What's key for me is really, like, how can we impact with Fermint those billions of people by creating the condition of a stakeholder capitalism?
Now that's really true. I really, really agree. Like, what your kids think about you, like, Joyce and I, we both have two kids, and I want to be able to tell them, like, when they are growing up, like, and they're telling me, hey, like, what were you doing in 2020 and 2021 when, like, things like tectonic plates were shifting and all. And I want to be able to say, well, I was pushing as hard as I could to be on the right path of, I don't know if we'll succeed. I hope so. But at least we will have fought hard to make it succeed.
Well, I think both of those answers are awesome. And thank you so much for being on the Boost VC podcast.
Thanks, Adam.
Thanks a lot for inviting me.
Thank you so much for tuning in during your busy day to learn about sci-fi technologies. For more info on what we do, check out our website at www.boost.vc or give us a follow on Twitter and Facebook at BoostVC. A big thank you to Maddie Callender, Coy Lee, and Ben Lavelle for their support in creating and producing this podcast. A musical thank you to Melodrive and their AI composer for our amazing intro and outro songs. If you need music for your digital content, check them out at melodrive.com. Lastly, thanks to Tim Hollowell with the Podcast Group in Washington, who did an incredible job mixing this audio. Boost VC is all about helping amazing sci-fi tech succeed. If you have an idea you think we should hear, get in touch with us at boost.vc/contact. And make sure to sign up to get notified when applications open for the next Accelerator Tribe. Also, we love to hear from our listeners. So rate us and drop us a comment on whatever streaming service you use. We would love to hear feedback. That's it for this week. And unfortunately, we don't have enough time for Mark Zuckerberg. But be sure to tune in next week when he's available. This is Adam Draper signing off. Pew, pew, pew.